preventing financial exploitation of the elderly. There are a number of ways that predators can take advantage of elderly minors, including fraud and financial exploitation by family members. Telephone scammers have stolen thousands of dollars from vulnerable, trusting seniors who are duped into believing that they're helping a loved one in trouble. But steps are being taken to identify these abuses and to try and prevent them. I'm Keith Shortall, and today on the program we'll talk with Detective Seth Blodgett of the Maine Attorney General's Office, Dennis Cully, Senior Staff Attorney with Legal Services for the Elderly, and later in the program we'll be joined by Gail Richardson, President and CEO of Midcoast Federal Credit Union. We'd like to hear from you. Do you have a question, a comment, or a story of financial abuse or advice to share? Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, post to our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. What you can do to prevent financial exploitation and fraud that targets seniors. This is Maine Calling.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners and by Midnight Energy, who wants to know, if they don't need oil to heat and cool their buildings, what's your excuse? Information on GeoExchange and other alternatives at midnightenergy.com.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. We hear these stories all the time of elderly people being duped into handing over money in exchange for services that aren't rendered, or some other type of fraud, telephone fraud. Sometimes it's hard for us to believe that this can keep happening and that predators would prey on some of our most vulnerable citizens, and yet the stories continue. It would make us believe that this is a growing problem and pervasive problem, but let's find out. Dennis Cully, Senior Staff Attorney for Legal Services for the Elderly, welcome to Maine Calling, first of all.
Thank you. Very happy to be here.
How serious a problem is this? And by that, I mean the sort of the bigger scope of all financial abuses targeting the elderly.
I think it's a large and growing problem. I think we're seeing it being reported now more for two reasons. I think reporting is up, but I also think exploitation is up. And I think the sort of the dirty secret of exploitation by those very close to the elder is now sort of coming out of the closet. The exploitation by family members, loved ones, caretakers, far more prevalent than exploitation by people who the elders don't know.
Strangers who are doing scammers.
Yes.
And yet those are the stories that sometimes get the most attention. I don't know why that is. I guess it's I don't know why it is, but the sort of this idea of calling and creating a false crisis that lures older people into wiring money to a stranger, it seems to get more attention than the brother-in-law who sees an opportunity to come in and take money.
I think those sorts of things absolutely happen, and I think they are also on the increase. I think you have a target-rich environment with the elderly. It's estimated in America 75% of the assets in America are in the hands of those 55 and older. And as Willie Sutton said when he was asked why he robbed banks, he said, because that's where the money is. I think the elderly, for a number of reasons, are a very tempting environment for scammers of all sorts. I think perhaps one of the reasons why there may be higher profile reporting and you hear more about scammers by strangers is elders are always reluctant, and I know Seth sees this all the time, always reluctant to sort of air the family's laundry publicly. And when someone very close to an elder steals from them, it's an extraordinarily painful thing. We find among clients who we help, it's rare to find an elder who will go all the way through with a civil matter against a family member, and even rarer, be willing to speak about it publicly.
Detective Seth Blodgett, is that what you're finding at the Maine Attorney General's office?
Yes, we're seeing an increase in the number of reports of financial exploitation. But as Dennis mentioned, many of our elders are embarrassed. They feel they're embarrassed. I think that there's a sense that if I report this, people are going to think I can't manage my affairs, take care of my own financial situation. Also, often, as has been mentioned, it's often family members or trusted people in that older person's life. Particularly, it's we see cases where the older person may not have any family member, particularly here in the state of Maine, where we have a number of older people that move to Maine from other places. Their children or their children moved away, so they become reliant and dependent on someone who is there serving in that capacity to take care of them.
And it's not just because they, you know, we don't want to paint a broad brush and suggest that because they're older, they're incapable of knowing what's going on. This is a trusting generation. This is sort of a World War II, slightly after World War II era that grew up in a country that I guess trusted people and were. Is that part of the equation?
Yes, it is. And anyone can be a victim. Any older person or any one of us can be a victim of financial exploitation. The problem with elder abuse or financial exploitation of the elderly is those folks are more dramatically affected by that financial exploitation than maybe someone like you or I or Dennis. We can recoup at least part of those assets as we'll probably live a little longer than someone who's 75, 80 years old. So they are very trusting. And, you know, those are the things that I think that we need to get across to our older population or someone who feels that they've been exploited, that there shouldn't be any shame in reporting that, to try to seek help, whether it be some sort of civil action or try to protect whatever assets might be left.
And you mentioned something interesting, which I hadn't thought of, which is that some older Mainers may fear that if it's found out that they made this error and handed money over or were duped, that they might lose their independence because their children might think, oh, well, Grandpa can't take care of himself anymore because he's done this thing. It's sort of like they're fearing they're losing their independence.
Exactly. And that's what we hear from a number of people who that was one of their major concerns, as well as being a family member.
Dennis Cully, do scammers know this? Are they aware of all of these factors that makes this group a popular target?
I believe so. If you look at, for example, telephone scammers, elderly Americans and elderly Mainers are overrepresented among those who still have landlines. Everyone I know under the age of 30 relies on a cell phone. Older Mainers tend to still have landlines, and they also tend to, unlike a lot of younger Mainers, they tend to just answer the phone when the phone rings and start talking to whoever's on it. So there's that. There's also, as you and Seth were discussing, the trusting aspect. The other thing is that's peculiar about this generation, sometimes called the greatest generation, is the great accrual of wealth in real estate since World War II. A lot of them... a lot of rural Mainers are land rich, cash poor, and their homes and land have accrued greatly in value. And that's another thing that makes them especially tempting targets.
This is the great wealth transfer that we're talking about. They've amassed a lot of money. And so, as you said, that's where scammers will go. Let's talk about some of the scams out there. I've reported on some scams where the general theme is the older people get a call from a stranger purporting to be, say, a Canadian law enforcement official, and they say, I've got your grandson here, and off the phone a little bit, they can hear a voice going, Grandpa. Anyway, and the end of it, the scam is the official seeks money to bail out the kid who allegedly has gone into Canada without the proper credentials. Is that a standard scam, sort of? A cry for help?
Sure. The scammers appeal to emotions. And one of the emotions they appeal to is filial loyalty and family loyalty. Another emotion they appeal to, that all scammers appeal to, is greed. The Spanish lottery scenario or scenarios like that, you have won, you know, $250,000. In order to pay some transfer taxes, you have to send us a little bit of money. And people will believe it because they want to believe it. We find the most dangerous time in those scams is after the first payment has been made. Sometimes these scammers who are very sophisticated and very learned at what they do will sometimes ask for initial very small payment, tens or $20, something like that, to get the elder to buy in to the scam. And once you start contributing to it, there's a need to believe further in it. And so the small initial contributions can often be ramped up to much larger contributions down the road. And by that point, the buy-in is so deep that people just don't want to believe they've been duped.
Do we have any sense of how much money has been lost in Maine in the last year, for example, or in the last 5 years to these?
I wouldn't have any specific figures on that, would Seth?
No, I wouldn't have that answer.
And how hard is it, Detective Blodgett, to track these scammers down?
When we're talking about scammers, they can be very difficult because many of these calls or contacts are initiated overseas or out of the country or cross jurisdictional lines, which creates a problem for law enforcement. The federal law enforcement agencies, I know, have been looking to address some of these issues as far as prosecuting or apprehending and prosecuting these folks, but it can be very difficult. The key thing is to have people hang up on that person. If it's too good to be true, it's probably not true.
Well, let's go there then. What are some of the warning signs that right away something might be wrong and that you should hang up?
Well, if you haven't bought a lottery ticket, you almost certainly haven't won the lottery. In fact, I would say that's 100% certain. Any offer that is unsolicited should be treated with great skepticism. Any offer coming over a phone line that's unsolicited, anything that sounds anything like too good to be true almost certainly is too good to be true. And I would say this about scammers. Scammers are a real problem, and they're a real threat to elders. The larger threat, sadly, is far closer to home. If I were to draw concentric circles, I would put scammers out at circle number 4 or 5. In the central circle, I would have, sadly, those who are most closely related to the elder. Frankly, their children, their other loved ones, their lovers, caretakers, and then perhaps the next circle out, I might have people like handymen, other people who insert themselves into the elder's life and get close to them and gain their trust.
What are some of the warning signs that this might be happening? There's a new best friend who arrives and is suddenly incredibly generous.
I bet when your banker calls in, the banker will be able to speak to what tellers see all the time. The younger friend showing up at the counter with the elder and large withdrawals that are outside the normal banking habits of the elder happening. Isolation is a sign, much like domestic violence situations, exploiters will often isolate an elder. All of a sudden, they're not showing up at church. They're not showing up at the Grange. They're not calling their other relatives the way they once were, or they've suddenly been relocated. I think those can be warning signs. And also spending outside their normal habits and opening a joint account, which I would assume your banker calling will speak about.
Right. Many times, Detective Blodgett, despite having a lot of this wealth, some of these older folks don't know what they're worth. Is that right?
Well, particularly we see in when people are most vulnerable, they become a target of exploitation. For example, the loss of a spouse. And in many households, one or the other spouse has more knowledge about their assets, what they have for accounts and what that's worth. So when you have someone who passes away in a relationship after 50-odd years, that person who might have been the one to manage the assets or the money, that's a case where you might have someone come in and say, "I'll help you with your money. I can help you with that." And you're right. There are people who don't know what they have for assets, don't know what their payments are, or what they have available to them for liquid assets.
And so, bankers, credit unions are being sort of trained or brought into this to help identify kind of patterns that may be emerging that are signs of this kind of abuse by close family members with respect to the elderly. And we will talk to Gail Richardson at Midcoast Federal Credit Union. When we come back, we're going to take a short break. You can join the conversation as well, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Israel's Arab voters could boost their representation in parliament, but many will not vote next week. An Israeli Arab activist says that plays right into the hands of those opposed to Arab-Israeli rights.
Well, if you chose not to vote, then it's easy maybe to eliminate your right to vote, maybe to cancel your right to vote.
Arab Israelis lose their faith in democracy. That's next time on The World.
Join us for The World this afternoon at 3 o'clock.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, Israeli politics loom large in American policy. Next week is a big vote there. We'll look at sharply different visions for Israel's future. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Join us for On Point this evening at 11. Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listener contributions and by Sweetser, serving mental and behavioral health needs of children, adults, and families in Maine since 1828. Sweetser.org.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, identifying and preventing the financial abuse of the elderly. With me in the studio, Detective Seth Blodgett. He's with the Office of the Attorney General. And Dennis Cully, Senior Staff Attorney with Legal Services for the Elderly. Joining us on the line now, Gail Richardson, President and CEO of Midcoast Federal Credit Union. Gail, welcome to Maine Calling.
Thank you very much.
In the interest of full disclosure, I am a member of Midcoast Federal Credit Union. So I just wanted to get that out there.
Well, that's good news for me.
It's good news. Good news for me, too. Gail, we were talking before the break about, I guess, some signs that banks and credit unions look for to identify, a possible situation of abuse of an elder by a family member or another person. What are some of the things that you might see?
Well, we're on the lookout these days for this type of activity, and we've seen more of it. Oftentimes we'll see some intimidation perhaps going on from a family member to an elder, trying to get them to get them some money from their account, withdrawal for them, or we may see them coming in to cash checks off the member's account, the elderly member, and they're not somebody that we would normally see come in to transact that business, or more activity on the member's account. The elder person doesn't usually write so many checks, but then we start to see a number of checks clearing, those types of things.
And if you saw, you know, a lot of checks being written to a surfboard maker, you might be suspicious, or
Yes, we don't actually, unfortunately, we don't actually see each check come through and who it's written to, but we will pick up activity on the account that doesn't appear to be normal, and the tellers, of course, are our first line of defense against this because they're the ones that form the relationship with the elderly member that's coming in. So if they see something different, they'll call it to a supervisor's attention or try to get more information out of the member themselves.
And so what do you do? You have a sense a red flag goes up. What steps do you take then?
Well, we start asking a lot more questions. And sometimes people are a little bit irritated by that because they don't like to be asked a lot of questions about their financial business. But it's our job, too, to try to protect them in any way that we can. So members coming into the credit union are going to see us asking more questions about when they present a check, perhaps, that's not the norm or a large item, or if they send someone in to do business on their account with a note. Sometimes they'll send them in with a note, and we haven't actually seen the member. Then we'll call that member back and talk to them directly. Or if they're in our lobby and someone is appearing to put some pressure on them, we'll try to take them aside and get them to talk to us without that other person present. Just get more information.
Yeah. Now, this would, I'm not sure how to ask this, but this seems sort of above and beyond the obligations of a credit union or a bank. What is the interest of banks and credit unions in taking a sort of more aggressive approach to identifying a possible abuse?
Well, I think that fraud is, it's much increased. And back when I first started the credit union 30 years ago, we wouldn't have asked those types of questions. But the world is different, and our members are vulnerable especially our elderly members, to this type of abuse and this scam. So it's our job to try to protect our members' money. That's what we're here for. We try to service our members in every way that we can, and we certainly don't want them to be taken advantage of or have losses because someone's scamming them for their money.
Have you had cases that where you saw something happening, you were suspicious, you pressed someone on it, and indeed an investigation ensued and it was discovered that you were right?
Well, we have had recently, we just had that. Previously, we were speaking about the grandchild scenario, and we just recently had that happen. Actually, it was about a month ago when one of our members came in and was going to take a large amount of money out and then have it wired. Actually, she was going to Walmart to wire the money instead of doing it here on instruction, and had been told that her grandchild was in jail in Canada. And she believed it. The first day, we tried to talk her out of taking the money, and she was determined, and she did. The second day, she came back for more money, a larger sum, and we were able to convince her that this was a scam, and upon investigating, of course, it was.
Interesting. Detective Blodgett, can you ever get into the middle of a scam while it's happening and use that to try to investigate the source?
Often we don't hear about it until after the money has already been wired or sent to the sender. But as has been mentioned, often these people will call the victim back again and ask for more money. So I know that there are law enforcement agencies that have tried to intervene to try to get to the source of where that scam is originating from.
1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. That number again is 1-800-399-3566. You can email us, email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Gail Richardson, one question here, and then if you can stay on, that would be great. Are tellers trained to do this now? Is this a part of what your personnel has to learn about?
Most definitely. Our tellers are taught to ask questions, not take anything at face value, to look for something that would be out of the ordinary, and then to question it. And they do a very good job of that. They're a great first line against this type of thing.
Have you ever had a customer be so incensed that they got angry and withdrew their accounts and left?
I haven't actually heard of any of our members leaving because of this, but I do know that sometimes they do get irritated and irate and don't understand why we're questioning them. And the staff has been instructed to explain to them that we're trying to help protect their money and that we don't want them to suffer a loss. And so that's why we're asking the questions that we are, and we hope that we don't offend them.
Yeah. We'll go to the phones in a minute. Dennis Cully, is there sort of training or a seminar? Or where can, I guess, older Mainers get either a course or instruction or guidance in how to avoid these pitfalls?
Well, as staff attorneys with Legal Services for the Elderly, one of our missions is public outreach. And so we do, we present to senior groups and people who work with seniors. We publish articles in newspapers. We go on Keith Shortall's radio show, that sort of thing. The banks have begun making a serious effort, as Gail's talking about, to educate elders. And my hope is to become part of a best practices with banks, including some cautions on joint accounts. I'm hoping maybe Gail will get a chance to speak about the danger of joint accounts for the elderly.
All right. And we'll ask you about that, I promise. Gail, first, though, to the phones, to Orono and Joe. Hi, Joe. Welcome to Maine Calling.
Thank you. I wanted to just let you know that I've had my bank account compromised, my credit card compromised, by a family member. That got straightened out. I've also had a phone call, which I recognized immediately as being fraudulent. But last week I got an email from my friend's name was on it, so I opened it, but it was asking for money, and I knew immediately it was not from my friend. And I tried to report it and didn't know exactly how to go about that to make sure that somebody was going to be prosecuted for that.
Either
Well, what I would say, Joe, is the first thing you should do is call your local law enforcement. But
okay.
you should also consider a call to the Legal Services for the Elderly Helpline. It's a free 1-800 number, 1-800-750-5353. Seth and those who work in law enforcement can seek, if appropriate, criminal remedies. Legal Services for the Elderly can seek civil remedies. Mm-hmm. And civil remedies are geared towards trying to make the plaintiff, the person who brings the suit, whole and attempting to get the money back. Criminal penalties may include that. They also include punishment, including jail, that sort of thing. So I think it's a good idea for someone in your position to do both, call local law enforcement and also try and seek civil relief.
What was that number again, just slowly so we can...
1-800-750-5353.
Well, that's very helpful. Thank you very much.
You're
now,
welcome.
Joe seems to have been targeted from all sides here, from inside the family to anonymous scammers.
That's true.
Do people end up on lists? In other words, they get taken once, or not taken, but do they end up on a list of this passed around?
Yeah, absolutely. Here's a scenario we've seen. Elder exploited by, for example, a phone scam repeatedly. Then other phone scammers, perhaps in league with the original phone scammer. And then even after someone stops in, perhaps puts the scam to rest, the elder is then called back by people who offer to recover the money if the elder will only send some more money. We had a case like that in one of our southern offices. The only solution we found was an unlisted phone number because the scammers were just relentless.
We have also another anecdote from the south. We'll go to Ogunquit and Robert. Hi, Robert. Welcome to Maine Calling.
Yeah, hi. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Yes, I have a question, more of a question, just a little bit of a background. My aunt was taken by her own daughters. My aunt is elderly, and her own daughter took her for the tune of $300,000. The problem is that it was done with a power of attorney. And I'm just wondering if you have any connections, any advice for somebody in North Carolina or contacts, and I'll take your answer off the air, please. So
this is also a common thing, is it not, to win for a child to, or a relative to seek power of attorney. First of all, explain what that is and why people seek it to get money.
Sure. Power of attorney is an extremely misleading title for a fairly simple document. The word power in power of attorney means document or paper, and the word attorney really means agent. If that device, that legal tool, were named in modern terms, it would be called document appointing agent. But as with many things in the law, outdated, archaic language is used. And the one of the problems with power of attorney in general is that people see that word power and a type of power madness comes over them. They become a little bit like General Haig after Ronald Reagan was shot. You know, I'm in charge here. And they assume that they are in charge of the elder's life completely. Elders will tell me something like, I want to go to Florida this winter, but I can't because my daughter has power of attorney over me. Nobody has power of attorney over another competent person. Agents under power of attorney can misuse that very powerful legal tool under a durable financial power of attorney, and they can write checks, access accounts on behalf of the elder. A dutiful power of attorney is a very valuable and wonderful tool for an elder who needs it, but a non-dutiful power of attorney isn't.
So you don't have to have a joint account
nope.
to take money out if you have power of attorney in
Correct.
Some cases. And
Correct.
That's why it's, I see.
Correct. Abuse of powers of attorneys are, you know, they happen everywhere. I don't know the legal code in North Carolina. I know here in Maine, there's a relatively recent addition to the probate code, Title 18A, Section 5916, which gives specific remedies against malfeasance by agents under power of attorney. And that can be especially helpful in the probate court, because as Seth was telling me before we came on the air about a recent criminal matter he was involved in, how long these matters can take. In probate court, you have a very good chance in getting in front of a judge relatively quickly and getting some sort of ruling. And for an elder who, you know, may not have all the time in the world to wait for a remedy, probate court can be a very good thing. As to North Carolina, I don't know anyone in North Carolina. Nevertheless, what you might do, Robert, is it your mom that suffered this?
Robert's gone because we're about to take a break, but he's probably listening. So
yeah, well, we might have whoever suffered this call into the helpline and see if they can find someone to refer them to in North Carolina.
All right, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll go back to the phones, and we have an anonymous caller who will share their personal story. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Add an A to the word STEM and you get STEAM. How educators are adding the arts to science and technology, the STEM subjects, to get a new approach to 21st century literacy. STEAM, not just STEM, next time on The Takeaway from Public Radio International.
Tune in for The Takeaway this evening at midnight. MPBN News offers daily Maine news updates sent directly to your email inbox. Our award-winning news team produces daily updates throughout the day, and if you'd like, you can have those news alerts automatically emailed to you. Also, you can sign up for a daily email alert about what's coming up on Maine Things Considered. Signing up is easy. Just click the Sign Up link on our homepage or click News, and then select Subscribe to News Updates. You don't have to wait for our news programs to air. You can be updated as the news happens. This afternoon at 1 o'clock, join us for the Commonwealth Club of California. Today's topic, political science and climate change. That's the Commonwealth Club of California coming up at 1 o'clock immediately following Maine Calling here on MPBN Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, helping spot scams that target the elderly. With me in the studio, Detective Seth Blodgett with the Office of the Attorney General, Dennis Cully, Senior Staff Attorney with Legal Services for the Elderly, and Gail Richardson, President and CEO of Midcoast Federal Credit Union, is on the line with us. Join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Email talk at mpbn.net. Post to our Facebook page or tweet at Maine Calling, as promised, now to an anonymous caller who we will call Dee, who has a story to share. Hi, Dee. Welcome to Maine Calling.
Hi,
yes.
Keith.
Hi.
Comment ça va, mon cher?
Yeah, c'est bon. Merci.
The reason I'm calling, Keith, is that I am a prime example of being scammed, of being abused, of being whatever, because you know what? I am a living example because I'm too trusting. I fall for sob stories, and I get hooked, line and sink into it, like you hook a fish.
Dee, can you share a quick example of what happened?
Well, the most recent one is I came out of a store, and I had some heavy, and by the way, Keith, I'm going to be 70 this month. And people don't think that I am, but that's besides the point. Age is just a number. And I asked this young lady, if I gave her money for gas, if she would give me a ride home, because the burdens were too heavy for my stature. I'm 4'11", and I weigh 95 pounds. And she says, well, I don't know you, and the sob story, and blah, blah, blah. And she says, well, all right. So she said, no wonder it was too heavy for you. It is a heavy bag. So to make a long story short, we started talking. She started telling me about a sob story about her boyfriend breaking up with her after 5 years and so forth and so on. And her sister had committed suicide over drugs, and the anniversary was 2 days away. And the end result is I ended up buying her food because all she had in her car was a Subway sandwich that had been there for God knows how long. Mm-hmm. And then we stopped at the store. I needed to get some cigarettes. I spent money that I couldn't afford because I'm on a limited income. And by the way, Keith, there is no such thing as the golden years when you're retired.
Sure. Real quick, Dee, though, we're limited on time.
The matter is we exchanged numbers. She came to my home, and because she was from North Carolina, she didn't have a jacket, so I gave her one of my jacket, and 2 weeks later, she still has my jacket. But what she has is she's made a fool of me.
Yeah.
Because when I remembered, God help those that have a computer memory, and mine is still working so far, when I remembered what motel she was staying at, I called there because her cell phone number had been disconnected. And I'm tenacious, if nothing else. You know, like a dog with a bone.
Right. So you got her, and that's great.
No, I didn't get
her.
Oh, you didn't
what
get her.
What I found out is she'd been thrown out for scamming an elderly lady living in a motel of $190.
Right.
And when the people called the police, nothing was done about it.
Okay. I'm sure the world is filled with these stories of people reaching out to be good-hearted and get taken advantage of. It happens even on a very small scale, I guess, is the point.
Yes, it does. And we need to be very careful, and obviously. And there are people, a lot of needy people out there today, especially with the current economic situation.
Let's go to Rick in Lincolnville. Hi, Rick.
Hi. I'm calling from Lincolnville, and I'll try to be very brief. I'm a semi-retired attorney with an emphasis in estate planning. I also work a good deal with the Volunteer Lawyers Project in Maine, which helps provide pro bono attorneys to people in a variety of areas. I know you're going to be talking a bit about joint accounts, and I just wanted to mention that we've seen occasions in my practice where I think, despite excellent intentions, bank personnel can sometimes create some problems that I'm sure they don't intend by advising depositors that joint accounts may often be an alternative or a convenient way to avoid probate or otherwise dispose of their assets upon their death without what they perceive to be the complications of going through some administrative steps. And some of your listeners may be thinking, of course, an attorney wants people to go through probate because that's a boon to attorneys. It's really, in Maine, a very straightforward process. And frequently a joint account can either defeat or negative someone's will or their other very good intentions. And we've had occasions where even tellers will say, well, if you really want your daughter to have your money, go ahead and create a joint account. Unfortunately, that means that those assets could be accessible to a son-in-law or another family member. So It's an analysis that has to be done carefully, and this is not about promoting the services of attorneys, but simple solutions are often not the best solutions. Yeah. I think that can be a prelude to your more detailed discussion of it.
Rick, thanks for calling in. Gail Richardson, how does this unfold with the joint account? It's a son or daughter saying, oh, Mom, let me help you pay those bills, and you don't have to worry about it, and getting in that way?
Well, usually we're after that fact, because usually they've had this conversation someplace else before they come into the credit union to open the account. So basically by the time they get to us, they've already convinced or suggested that they are become joint account holders. So we are somewhat limited at that point to try to talk somebody out of an account. And I try not to have any of my staff give legal advice because we're not attorneys.
Sure.
So there are dangers to joint accounts. Joint accounts also can be very effective in many different areas. But in elder cases, there can be abuse because they have the right to take the money out. Anything that they want to do with the account, they're allowed to do as a joint account holder.
Right. Detective Blodgett, there's
the money. They can close the account if they so desire.
There's nothing you can do after the fact of a joint account being used to, I mean, there's no crime.
Right. Correct.
That's right.
Go ahead, Dennis.
There may be a civil remedy for misuse of a joint account, something like unjust enrichment, or even in certain circumstances you could construe improvident transfer of title. But one of the problems with joint accounts, as Gail pointed out, is that both people on the account can access 100% of the money. And many people just don't understand that. You'll often hear something like, I put my daughter's name on my account. Or I've even heard people who've worked around banks say, oh, so-and-so is the primary and the daughter is the secondary.
Mm.
If your name is on the account and it's a joint account, you own 100% of the account. And that can be a fraud situation. As Gail said, it can work out fine. With the dutiful, responsible child or loved one, it's fine. But it also can be a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
Just one thing on the joint account. We did have a successful prosecution where a person who was the power of attorney was also on the joint account, and she was convicted.
Oh, so it can.
So it can.
And if I could just add one thing, if banks were to do one thing, and I'm sure Gail and others have talked about this, to establish perhaps as a best practice is to advise an elder alone without the person who might be the few, with this conversation that Gail has talked about that's already happened somewhere else, have another conversation alone with the elder just to explain to them exactly how powerful a joint account is and just exactly what a joint account is, not just putting someone's name on the account. It gives them access to the whole account.
Let's go to Jeff in Gray. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to the program. We're a little short on time, but if you can keep it to a minute or so.
Well, I have a problem with some of the business practices. One of them is my parents both had Alzheimer's, and they get a statement from the insurance company saying this is not a bill. At the bottom it says you owe this. So they pay it, and then they'd get a bill from the doctor, and they'd pay it. And when we took over their estate, none of the doctors would acknowledge that they'd been paid twice. Had a problem with the bank. I found my father had $260,000 in the bank, and it was earning 1%, and they were offering people that came in across the threshold 3%. Nobody at the bank said, you know, you've been a good customer. Why don't we do your loan, your savings at 3%? This was a few years ago. And I just think that's morally wrong. Adult care. My father needed no medication whatsoever, but they charged him $10 a day for an aspirin that the doctor said he didn't even need. But they made another $10 a day on him, and I understand they're charging for each application of a medication now.
So these are I don't know if they're illegal, but they're immoral. Are they? Are these sort of things illegal as well? Possibly.
Well, I think Jeff put it right. Perhaps bad business practices. And I don't know Jeff, and I probably never will meet Jeff, but if I only had 30 seconds of exposure to somebody, Jeff sounds like what I would want for a good agent under a power of attorney. He sounds careful. He sounds skeptical. And he also sounds acquainted with how the world actually works. And I think that's what you want in an agent under power of attorney. If you have two children, perhaps the daughter who has a job and a family and a busy life, and a son who maybe has never really amounted to much and has nothing to do, you don't want to pick the son as the agent. You want the dutiful, engaged, worldly person who really doesn't want the job but probably would understand how it works. That's what you want for an agent.
We've got about 45 seconds left. Any last words or advice on where to turn? Dennis, we'll go with you first.
I would say an elder or a person close to an elder who suspects financial exploitation should not hesitate to give us a call, 1-800-750-5353. We are no-fee providers of civil services to Mainers in matters related to basic human needs, including financial exploitation and other things related to housing, consumer credit, eviction, all of that.
All right. And I'm afraid with that, we're out of time. Thanks, everyone, for being here. Seth, Dennis, and Gail, I appreciate your presence here today. Seth Blodgett, detective with the Office of the Attorney General, Dennis Cully, a senior staff attorney with Legal Services for the Elderly, and Gail Richardson, president and CEO of Midcoast Federal Credit Union. Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith. Volunteer Cindy Hahn answered your calls. John Keimel ran the board, and we had help from Lindsay Maynard and volunteer Marcel Hutchins and the MPBN web team. Tomorrow on the program, Digital Maine, a look at Maine's technology infrastructure, past, present, and future. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.